Okay, friends, we are ready to begin again with Egoic Lotus webinar commentary program number 7, Esoteric Psychology, Volume 1, page 324. We're dealing with the stages of adaptation. Perhaps it's good to just take one more look or occasional looks at the Egoic Lotus with its three tiers of petals, the Knowledge Tier 1, 2, and 3, the Love Tier 4, 5, and 6, and then the Sacrifice Tier 7, 8, and 9 appearing to go in a different direction, more counterclockwise along with the Zodiac. We simply assume that these are the synthesis petals, and that this one would be the knowledge synthesis, this one love synthesis, and this one sacrifice synthesis, along with the 24 points found in the center and the 8-pointed star, which shows both the cardinal cross and the midpoints of the fixed cross, the power points, as they are called. So I think we have now studied stages of adaptation numbers 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. We are on number 6. Just to, we've also studied, of course, the soul groups or the human groups, which of which there are 10. And we've tried to link the stages of adaptation that we've studied with those 10 human groups or soul groups. We've also learned a little bit about the different petals as we've gone along, but our focus has not been exactly on those petals, more on these various groups. When it comes to these stages of adaptation, well, let's see, just to review, the first one is unconscious adaptation. And there is a very low level. He calls it the adaptation of the man who is primarily the unintelligent animal. Then comes the unconscious adaptation, in which there are faint flickers of mental perception, and sometimes the title here for this stage of quite selfish adaptation is animal cunning. Then we have looked at the third stage. It's a purely selfish adaptation, aware of motives. The man is making the best of circumstances. And it is there are some good motives, or at least some good actions, but the motives behind them are really governed by the desire for comfort. And so we can call this conscious selfish adaptation. Then he goes into the fourth stage of adaptation, which spans many different types of adaptation, all the way from selfishness to the nth degree, to the point where there is an awakening realization of the right of the man, or the right of other people, to a similar degree of comfort and harmony that the man himself is enjoying. So he still maintains his desire for personality life, but he hopes that his purely selfish interests do no real damage to others. So what have we called it? Let's see. Well, it's not yet the truly good person, and there is no motivation that is entirely altruistic here. It's not an altruistic motivation. We've called it enlightened or intelligent self-interest. We hear this discussed in political circles, enlightened self-interest, intelligent self-interest. Then, after moving to this group that has spanned quite a number of different stages, we move into the fifth group, where we have goodwill entering. This is the average, and DK says, really good man, not just the one who seems to be good, but the one who actually is. He still has his selfish intentions, but he's really struggling here, and to demonstrate some measure of love. It seems to correlate quite well with some of the factors found in the sixth petal. There is the element of conscience entering, which causes the struggle. And this is not just the earlier love of family, which is quite instinctual and is found even in the hall of ignorance. This is motivated love, which recognizes the rights of others and consciously strives to adapt itself to those recognized rights. But this is important, whilst tenaciously holding on to the rights of the personality, which tells us that both the later fifth and the sixth petal are involved here. Neither one of them, until completed, signifies the first degree. So we know that many aspirants are selfish, and this seems to be the beginning of a kind of stage of aspiration. Then we come to the point where we really are, and where the true aspirant enters. So this is the sixth stage of adaptation. Let's first see what DK says about it, and then I'll put down something of what I have said and what other members of the classes have said. Then we have the work of adaptation, you know, which is the control of self and the environment, the intelligent control of self and of the environment. I'm going to reiterate that, because it's important that we keep in mind what is adaptation. The intelligent, I have jumping cursor, if I could simply understand what is the cause. The intelligent control, the intelligent control of self and of and environment. So, and of course, with the purpose not just of surviving, as it is in the earlier days, but the purpose of actually bringing through the divine plan. So this is carried on by the aspirants of the world, who are theoretically convinced of their group relation. DK is here pointing out the kind of fallibility that often accompanies the life of the aspirant, where one has the theory, but one cannot quite live it, and so ends up still being selfish and not group conscious. So it's the work of adaptation is carried on by the aspirants of the world, who are theoretically convinced of their group relation, of its paramount importance, and of the need of every personality to develop its powers to the fullest capacity in order to bring real value to the group and serve adequately the group needs. So one does not want to control others. One wants to bring forth the gifts of others, the gifts of their causal body, the gifts of their soul toward the contribution of the group. So this is more than the average, it's more than the average nice, good person, which is found in number five here of the human groups. They are the good, well-intentioned, they are the nice people, they are the easily regimented, they are sheep of the human family. It's more than that. And it's more than, and it's more than stage of adaptation number five, where you have the average really good man, as it is said, but still quite selfish. These people are, in fact, aspiring to be unselfish. The aspirants are aspiring, even though they have still something in their nature which is selfish. The really good man is not necessarily aspiring to be unselfish. He's simply trying to balance the selfish pursuits which he wants to follow with the realization that other people have a right to follow similar selfish pursuits. Such a person can think, well, look, everybody's selfish, so we simply have to give everybody the right to be selfish. But these are the aspirants of the world, and so it's more than the average really good man. This correlates more with the sixth and seventh human group, who are the sixth is the creative workers, the creative thinkers, and the seventh group, human group or soul group, are the aspirants. These are not just the nice people, because the nice people don't really attempt to discipline themselves, and already we've seen discipline entering even in stage of adaptation number five. So here are the people who are wanting you to be able to develop and honoring your right to develop, realizing its importance, and not just doing that because if they don't do it, they will not be allowed to follow their own selfish inclinations. No, they have a higher sense of values here, this stage of adaptation number six. In true esotericism, there is no such motive as killing the personality. I think we all remember what happened in the Virgo labor when Hercules seized the girdle of the Amazon queen, who was going to offer all she had to him, and he killed her. And this was an injudicious thing to do, because after all, she represents the personality, and the personality is precisely the instrument of the soul in these lower three worlds. So you see all the time people who say that they are spiritual, and through their personality they apparently have very little to offer. So what's the use of being spiritual if you can't really improve the world through what's coming through your personality? So there's no such thing in true esotericism. You know, you got to watch those adjectives here, of killing the personality or of disciplining it to such an extent that it becomes a poor, dead thing. Kind of a pitiful description, isn't it? The true motive is to train the lower threefold nature, and immediately, of course, with training, we have the appearance of the sign Virgo, which, interesting that this is the sixth stage of adaptation, and Virgo is the sixth sign, and it correlates with the sixth human group and also with the seventh. But the training factor enters. The true motive is to train the threefold lower nature, the integrated personality, to the highest demonstration of its powers, latent or developing. So there are some petal five entering here, and the sign Leo, which correlates with petal five, where we have the full self-expression of the individual, and in petal six, a real training of that self-expression does occur. So this is the honoring of the light, the capacity, the quality, all that has been built and developed in other people, and trying to evoke it. And every really good leader does that. I mean, because people feel very joyous when they can express their true abilities, and they turn out to be much better workers, much more highly motivated, and can contribute much more to the whole when they are allowed to express that which is within them. So for those people who wish to stifle others for the sake of self-discipline or conformity to some standard to which everyone must give obedience, they are not really bringing forth the best of others, and they won't get the best results. So the true motive then is to train the threefold a lower nature, the integrated personality, to the highest demonstration of its powers, latent or developing, in order that these powers may be brought to the helping of group need, and the personality of the aspirant may be integrated into the group. And, you know, it's quite interesting that when the gifts can be offered, integration into the group becomes easier. I don't mean that they should be dominating other people, the gifts, and that only one person should be allowed to give his gifts. So let's just say when the gifts can be offered, there is better. Well, this is, we have some kind of jumping cursor here. There can be better integration into the group. This is really not doing what I want. integration into the group. Quite hard to type under these circumstances. Okay, continuing here. So, thereby, the group life is enriched, the group potency is increased, and the group consciousness is enhanced. My sense of this is that it's before the first initiation. It's the stage of aspiration. The sixth petal is that which is worked on before the stage of initiation. There's a lot of work being done in the seventh petal when the first initiation does occur. Okay. So this is awakening to group conditions before the first degree, and we no longer simply have the herd impulse. These people are individuals and not members of the mass or herd. They are correlated then with the sixth group to a degree of the human souls, human groups, where we have the really creative thinkers emerging, and correlated also with number seven, which is the stage of aspiration in the human groups. These are the souls who are now of such an order that they can pass on the probationary path. And even when we have these writers, artists, thinkers, and so forth, in human group number six, he says of them, they are the world aspirants. So especially in the latter part of the development of the fifth petal, the world aspirants come into focus. And then number seven is the probationary group. This is the groups of souls. The probationary groups are a little in advance of the aspirants per se. So what do we have here? The path of aspiration is beginning. Some of the physical disciplines of the first degree are found, such as fitness and things of that nature. We go on, and DK says more here. I'd like to actually move this just a little bit more in line with all the others. And here it will be. Okay. There we are. All right. So, what else does he say? What is therefore to be seen going on in the life of the true aspirant today, and that's what he seems to be calling these people, in this sixth stage of adaptation, he's developing recognition of group responsibility. No, let's just say it's impossible to be strictly selfish and to be an aspirant, or it's impossible to be majorly selfish and be a true aspirant. Actually, what DK once described as the true aspirant, all true aspirants have taken the first initiation. But there is variability in how this term is used, and here we do not yet seem to be dealing with those who have taken the first initiation, though maybe toward the end of it we might. So this can also be seen going on in groups and organizations and nations, and hence the sense of group responsibility found within groups themselves, hence the many experiments. A process is going forward whereby these groups, large or small, are being subjected to a discarding of the rubbish of old and worn-out ideas. And this is what DK called the house cleaning. And to a period of disciplining and training which must precede all real group life. So real group life is, well, it begins in earnest at the first degree. So we're definitely talking about a Virgo preceding Libra. As I mentioned in the earlier program, when Dave Nudier said, when does group consciousness really begin? It begins in the second hemisphere of the zodiac, moving from Libra to through Pisces. So this is the Virgo house cleaning which must be effected before it is possible for individuals to relate to groups and for groups to relate to groups. Otherwise, all of the outworn ideas prevent a really cooperative exchange. So discarding of the rubbish of old not-worn ideas and to a period of disciplining and training which must precede all real group life. It's so clearly Virgo, and when we're dealing with the number six, we do run into that necessity for self-discipline and group discipline. When this process is over, we shall have these groups approaching each other in a new and real spirit of cooperation. And that, of course, obviously, that is the Libran impulse. The, let's say, Libra as the, here we are, Libra as the, Libra as a sign of true cooperation. Okay. Jumping mouse. Mm-hmm. So of religious fusion, and in an international attitude which will be new indeed, and DK tells us that Libra is increasing in the planetary horoscope. So there is no real need for concern, he says. Well, obviously you would expect this with the coming in of the age of Aquarius. The various air signs are going to become more powerful. Now, why it should be Libra particularly in the planetary horoscope? Is it because Aquarius is increasing in the planetary horoscope, or simply because Libra in its own right is increasing in the planetary horoscope? Okay, then they will have something of a surer and greater value to offer to the whole. Right now, you know, there are many groups which are selfish or are divided between selfishness and or self-interest and altruism, and those that are truly selfless. So there's a movement towards selflessness in groups, just as DK warned us away from the possible creation of truly selfish groups, which would be much more dangerous and effective than the selfish individual. And we do see that in many of these groups that are simply out for their own self-interest. They're very powerful. They have a lot of financial and global power, and they are exploiting the environment and, as DK would say, wrecking the world. Okay. Within all these groups which are struggling towards this newer realization and integration, which expresses what we call the and which express what we call the sixth stage of adaptation, are those who are ready for the seventh. Okay, so we have unselfish groups, socially responsible groups and individuals, and this is correlating very well with the seventh of the human groups, or of the soul groups, you know, the seventh out of the tenth, where we have those who are really on the probationary path. Okay. And even, you know, there might be some of that going into the eighth group, those who are truly upon the path of discipleship. As I say, there's no exact one-to-one correspondence, and DK tells us that the connections, the kinds of things he could otherwise describe are so many and offer a kind of bewildering complexity. But let's say that the newer realization and integration, that describes pretty much the sixth stage of adaptation, and it is what aspirants and probationers are attempting to do, whether the aspirant who is the individual or the aspirant who is the group. So let's just say aspirants, okay, let's see what we have here. Okay, yeah, there we go. All right, so aspirants and probationers are attempting to do this. Okay. Well, and then there are those who are ready for the seventh stage, and how is this going to be described? And how will we, after all, describe what is the sixth stage, about which he spent, well, basically, it's the aspirants of the world, and I suppose, to a degree, the probationary disciple. Even in stage six, you find the probationary initiate. So they're attempting to quit their bad habits, aspirants and probationers. This pretty well describes what stage six is. Stage six of adaptation. This describes stage of adaptation number six. Okay. Now we have transcended selfishness. We are going into the seventh stage. Here we have the complete unselfish adaptation to the group needs and purposes. And he says this is characteristic of the new group of world servers. To be a true member of the new group of world servers is already a high achievement. And DK is basically saying that one has to be of the second degree and be on the lookout for those who are approaching the first and approaching the second degree. So this would span the human groups number 7 and 8 and maybe even some of 9. Perhaps the eighth human group and the true initiates are here found. Maybe more of group 9 is important here. And group 9 are the, they are the true initiates. Not just necessarily the probationary initiate, because the probationary initiate does not necessarily realize the fallacy of my soul and your soul. But the true initiate does. So let's read a little bit about this. Those who have reached this point in their evolution are decentralized as regards their personality life. So, you know, at the third initiation, the ancient domination of the personality is overcome. Whether the stage of decentralization as regards their personality life is the same thing as initiation, well, it might be a little bit preliminary. So let's see what the Tibetan says, and then we'll come back here. The focus of their mental attention is the soul and in the world of souls. Their attention is not directed towards the personality at all, except insofar as is needed for it to adhere to a group or soul purpose. These servers are expressions of soul radiance, okay? You know, radiant lotuses come to mind, and are knowers. And in every organization, they constitute the new and slowly growing group of world servers. Of course, the world servers can be found even at the third degree, and in a sense, the entire group has at its nucleus, we might say, even initiates of the fourth degree. So he emphasizes here the new group of world servers. The eighth human group is that of disciples, practical mystics, and then the souls who are initiated into the kingdom of God. So we are, in a sense here, going beyond the stage of aspiration because we have complete unselfish adaptation, and that is worth I think that is worth enlarging. This we pointed out. So they have reached this point in their evolution and are decentralized. The lower ego is not causing a problem. They are not motivated by the personality. Have they completely ended the ancient domination of the personality? Well, maybe not all members of the new group of world servers have, but third degree initiates have. So we are always told to take our eyes off our personal self. This is part of our occult training. And the personality has a lot to do with the solar plexus center and its personal desires. But decentralization is going to lift that focus to the heart center. At the second degree, decentralization can occur because there is disidentification from the desire nature. So it looks like these people are minimally of the second degree, being true members of the new group of world servers, not simply men and women of goodwill who are trying to do good things, but people who are truly motivated by service and not just by what service can bring to them. So there is a definite movement at the second degree from the solar plexus to the heart center, and it's this heart center which is going to give the ability to overlook the personality, think about the needs of others, and be selfless in fulfilling the recognized needs of others and of the world. So this is the seventh stage of adaptation, and it's taking us quite high into the probationary initiate status and even into the status of the true initiate. Because there's a big leap here, you know, it leaps from number 7 to 8 and in the stages of adaptation, and with number 8 we already have the very high initiates and the masters. So the focus here of their mental attention is not the fulfillment of desire, not the development or expression of the personality. Rather, it is in the soul, and in the world of souls, and this will mean the mental attention is focused upon the divine plan. Okay. Well, maybe I should have capitalized those. Divine plan. It is still mental attention, and it is not necessarily total polarization within the soul, because we're still dealing with perhaps initiates of the second degree who are not yet fully conscious on the level of the causal body, but it is very much a focus in what the soul seeks to do through the mind. It's like the third degree, but beginning a little earlier, and perhaps makes its way to the third degree. This kind of attention to the soul is in the soul and in the world of souls. Kind of attention, at least to the soul, is beginning at the first degree, when the Buddhic force moves strongly into the causal body, and even the monad can be detected in its presence in the causal body, but not by the man in his brain consciousness. So their attention is not directed towards the personality at all. And does this mean they have achieved that great domination, overcoming of the personality life, the ancient domination? Well, maybe not quite, but almost. Here's the statement that the moon, which represents the personality, falls in Scorpio, and Scorpio represents the second degree, the third degree, and even the first degree. So these are not probationary disciples that we could find more so in the sixth stage of adaptation. These are true disciples, probationary initiates, and even high probationary initiates who have somehow managed to really decentralize their life. So many people between the first and the second degree, they are still very concentrated upon the personality and, you know, fixing it of its imperfections that they have noticed and going through the various types of disciplines. But no, this group is really focused on the larger picture. We might say that in the stages of acclery, alignment, crisis, light, revelation, and integration, they are focused in the stage of revelation because they've done a lot of fixing of what the light reveals. So let's just say the stage of revelation in the ACLRI process is indicated. They may pay some attention to the personality in the sense that it has to serve the group. So this is real discipleship, and these are servers who are expressions of soul radiance. Remember how we discussed this, the radiant lotuses beginning at the first degree and in increasing with ever more radiance, the lotuses with perfume more at the second degree, although the radiance continues to increase, and then finally the lotuses of revelation. If radiance increases sufficiently, it becomes the power to reveal. So these are knowers, okay, and attractive power. They are expressions of radiance and attractive power. They are knowers of the plan. Is this in a first-hand manner or a second-hand manner? Beyond the third degree, it's possible to know the plan more in a first-hand manner. It doesn't have to be mediated to one through one's teachers, but Before that, at the second degree, the plan may come down as given by the higher initiates and masters, but at least one knows what one has to do with respect to the plan. A true knower of the plan might be one more of the third degree. And in every organization, they constitute the new and slowly growing group of world servers. Of course, initiates of the third degree can be members of this group of world servers, and as I said, even a nucleus of the fourth degree. And in their hands lies the salvation of the world. So they are adapting the environment, adapting themselves for the sake of saving the world. This is quite a different type of adaptation. Adapting themselves for the sake of saving the world. Or at least, let's just put serving and saving, shall we not? Serving and saving the world. So this is different. This is different from the stage of adaptation number six, where there were so many struggles towards the newer realization and integration. This was the stage of aspirant and also probationary disciple, where a lot of house cleaning had to be done. But they, by stage number seven of adaptation, they have succeeded in this house cleaning. And when we say complete unselfish adaptation, it places one in the ranks of high probationary initiates and even initiates. So I will, lower initiates of the second degree. I don't think that's a good thing to say. I would just say initiates of the second degree and of the third degree. When is the major blow against selfishness overcome? It's at the second degree, and here we have complete unselfish adaptation. So the major blow against selfishness has been overcome. Major blow against selfishness overcome, complete, and I'll just see what happens there. Complete unselfish, unselfish adaptation. Okay. Right. All right, so now we've studied seven stages of adaptation. And we are going into the eighth and final stage of adaptation. The final group in this scale of adaptation is that of the higher initiates. And I'm not sure he really considers an initiate of the third degree a higher initiate. The initiate of the third degree was the true initiate. Higher initiates, and so I tend to want to say those approaching the third degree, also of the fourth degree. So actually not even approaching the third degree, but those of the third degree who are approaching, that jumping mouse is really giving me a problem. So I'm going to have to do what I can do here. Who are approaching, otherwise I'll just have to talk, you know, and not write anything down. I think that's what I'll do because it's too frustrating right here. They are approaching the fourth degree and also of the fourth degree. So, at least I'll write that one word if I can even get it. Approaching the fourth degree and also of the fourth degree. So earlier he was talking about probationary initiates and initiates of the third degree. So, and the great companions. Well, the great companions, of course, are the masters of the wisdom. So this particular stage of adaptation is not so much about correlating with the ninth group. Well, yes, to an extent it correlates with the ninth group and with the tenth group. But when we talk about great companions, these are definitely the souls of the tenth group. They are the masters of life, or perfected adepts, as he calls them, the masters of life, or perfected adepts. Right. So going on, they are perfectly adapted. And, you know, so that suggests, does it not, a master is called an adept. They are perfectly adapted to their personalities. Their personality, however, might even be a Maya Virupa. Well, an almost fourth degree initiate would still have a personality. Maybe even a fourth degree initiate would still have a personality if that taking of that degree did not end up in the death of the personality and the destruction of the causal body. It's kind of interesting. Can the causal body be destroyed and the personality still remain as it is for the remainder of that incarnation? Because there are those who do survive the destruction of the causal body. They survive in their personality nature, in their physical nature, the destruction of the causal body. So it would seem that the personality would remain, and that the destruction of the causal body, maybe especially in the East, does not always mean the death of the individual, physically speaking. So they are perfectly adapted to their personalities, to each other. The masters work in harmony and deep cooperation, and to the world conditions, which they completely understand. But as a group, they are learning how to adapt the forces of nature and the energies of the rays, how to, you know, intelligently control. I think that's what we have looked at here as adaptation. Uh-huh. Well, it's just impossible. This has to be worked on. Okay. Intelligently control the forces of nature, the energies of the rays, and the potencies of the zodiacal signs to the world need and the world demand in a practical manner and at any particular time. So they really do know the times and seasons, and what is called all knowledge on the third subplane of the atmic plane is pretty well belonging to them in quite full measure, because to be a master is to have atmic skill and those particular abilities that pertain to the master from the atmic plane are theirs. And so we often theoretically say, well, this planet, this sign, this ray operates in such a way, but can we actually wield them? So the masters actually know the cycles and how to adapt or use the subtle energy for the good of the world. They can wield these energies, at least in a certain form, within the three worlds. They are divine manipulators, in a positive sense of the word, in intelligent directing and controlling and arranging of energies. So it is here that the work of the disciples of the world and of the higher types of aspirants proves helpful as a field of experiment. So as we are doing our work as aspirants and disciples, they who are adapting these subtle energies to world good can use us, experiment through us, and see to what level we can be used as instruments. So it is here that the work of the disciples of the world and of the higher type of aspirants, not just the selfish type, okay, so concerned about their own state, proves helpful as a field of experiment, and it is in the new group of world servers that the process of adaptation goes on. So the masters are using the new group of world servers as an instrument to work upon the adaptation of world circumstances. The servers do not stand alone. So much of their inspiration and what they conceive that they may do is coming from the thought process of the masters. So here we have, in stage of adaptation number 8, the initiates and masters. Let's see, anything else here? Yes, okay, well, adaptation, the intelligent control of self and circumstances to achieve certain ends, at first selfish, well, at first unfocused, then selfish, and then increasingly selfless, and then finally in line with the divine plan and purpose on our planet. So, as one who must adapt, we are asked how we are using our intelligence in the world and our willpower and our magnetic force to change the configuration of things so that in this world of becoming, the purposes and patterns and plans, and, well, purposes and patterns in the world of being are ever more closely approximated. So you could look at that in your own life, could you not? And you could try to see to what extent you are achieving approximation in your own life through your intelligent ability to adapt, approximation to the divine plan in your relations, in your service, in your various life activities. How much is it really a reflection of the divine plan? So DK goes on here. Well, okay. So I guess we've been reviewing this, and of course you can. You can review. We have certain rubrics, certain titles, which give what the stages of adaptation mean. Number 8 is the high initiates and masters. Number 7 is the true disciples and probationary initiates. Number 6, the stage of adaptation, are the aspirants and probationers. Number 7 is high disciplic, I would say. And the probationary disciples are found in number 6, along with the aspirants. And in number 5, we still have selfishness, but giving room for the selfishness of others, more than the nice, good person. Number 4, we have a span of stages from the nth degree of selfishness all the way to trying to do no damage to others. Maybe we could call this the beginning of harmlessness. With the third stage of adaptation, we have a man who is more socially successful. He's a thinker, but he uses other people and his environment in order to create satisfactions and comforts for the personality. He may appear to be quite a nice and good person, but there is selfish motive behind it. Number 2, we have animal cunning and thievery and really living by one's wits and victimizing others for one's own satisfaction is partially instinctual and partially thought. There's some mental perception, and by the time we return to number 1, we have the adaptation, which is largely, well, entirely instinctual. Man is primarily the unintelligent animal. He's governed by instinct, and he puts some of the lower types, or the less experienced types, let's say, of human beings into this category. He doesn't go as low in these stages of adaptation as the very first soul group, which DK says are of the nature of throwbacks and demonstrate atavism. something that is not of this day and period at all. So now we just will look at the last several things that he says. Talk about speed reading here, right? I have endeavored to outline these stages of the process of adaptation in terms of consciousness, viewing the subject, therefore, philosophically and psychologically. What are the changes in the man's inner attitude, how he sees the world, and how he responds to what he sees? It should be remembered that this process, as it goes on in consciousness, produces, surely and inevitably, this is a really important point, corresponding changes in mechanism and structure, and in sense perception through the apparatus of the body. But really, consciousness comes first. And it's so difficult in the modern age for us to convince people that what changes they hope to achieve in their physical body actually begin with consciousness. And that life after life, well, probably they're not going to believe in reincarnation overall, these changes occur because changes in consciousness have engineered the outer changes when the physical apparatus is remade, re-engineered at each approaching incarnation. So in esotericism and in occultism, a consciousness always comes first and is considered to be more real than its effects in the outer worlds. On these changes, which are changes in the mechanism and structure, and in maybe in the manner in which one perceives with the senses, because think about it, you know, the senses are not only found on the physical level, those five senses. They're also found on the astral level and on the mental level, and even before one is an initiate of the third degree, these other senses can be certainly awakening. People sense many usually hidden factors. So on these changes I lay no emphasis in this treatise, for they are beautifully dealt with by modern science, which is steadily forging ahead in the right direction. One has to be so very patient in this question of occultism and human unfoldment. The masters do not count time as we count time, and you know, even a few years seem a long time to us, and for them they think in terms of centuries and even in terms of precessional ages. So I lay the emphasis upon consciousness as a predisposing factor and on the developed sense of awareness, which produces an inner demand for improved equipment. You know, if only I could do this, if only I could do that, and that faculty, the necessary faculty fulfilling the if only, is worked up in between lives. There is, of course, some improvement in the general understanding and even of the equipment to a limited degree in a particular life. But the real change, so that the equipment acquiesces to the demand of consciousness, is going to occur between lives, and then new and more fit vehicles will come forth. The improving of equipment as a result of the demand of consciousness is the secret of the evolutionary impulse down the ages. Well, that is such a statement and something that I think deserves to be put in the bolder type. Okay. The improving of the equipment as the result of the demand of consciousness is the secret of evolutionary impulse down the ages. You kind of wonder why people who go in for cryogenics and for preserving the physical body just as it is with all of its limitations, so that at some point in the future they may be awakened to life. You kind of wonder why they do that, because they are imprisoning themselves and, well, they can't really do it anyway, okay, but they're depriving themselves of the improvement of equipment which occurs between lives in cooperation with the solar angel and the building devas and so forth. And they don't have the faith in reincarnation and to realize that ever more suitable equipment will be forthcoming, because they, as immortal spirits, have demanded greater and fuller expression. So this inner demand in man awakens the centers. And the awakening of the centers determines the response of the endocrine system, governs the nervous system in its threefold capacity, and also the bloodstream. So with more, let's just say, demand awakens the centers. This is the key, right? I can't believe it. It's so jumpy. Demand awakens the centers. Okay, demand awakens the centers, and then all the other subsidiaries follow accordingly. And the endocrine system and the nervous system respond likewise, and that means with what follows, there is more adequate equipment. Right. Thus, the outer form or mechanism is ever an indication of the point of evolution of the inner subjective or spiritual man. Quite a statement. And when you think about it, the outer equipment can improve during a particular incarnation, but there are probably limitations upon the degree of improvement that can be achieved. Sometimes maybe astonishing improvement, but the real type of improvement that we hope for, where the awakening of the centers and the response of the endocrine glands and nervous system, that the real improvement is going to occur because of re-engineering with the Devic lives and under the supervision of the Solar Angel, which will occur during the, it will occur between incarnations. Okay, I think that is going to be the end of our work with the stages of adaptation. We will be mentioning them, and we should, I've been trying for a long time and sometimes succeed to memorize them so that I have them at my disposal. So this is the end of the Egoic Lotus webinar commentary, program 7, and we seem to be in EP1, and we have reached page 207. We'll have the beginning of Egoic Lotus. Okay. Okay, Egoic Lotus webinar commentary, program 8, and we will begin at another place. I have yet to decide where we will begin, but we have finished these two groupings. So this is a one-hour program. Now, I think the thing for us to do is use the remaining couple of minutes with the Great Invocation. I think that's what we should do. Okay. Om. From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men. May Christ return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. Om. Om. Okay, friends, this will just be an hour program, and we'll be getting into something else. You know, there are so many things to choose from. All of these are preliminary, I think, to a real understanding of the egoic lotus, or at least are worthy correlations, which should be brought together with everything we've learned about the, or are learning about the tears and petals of the egoic lotus. So, in this case, if I save this, it's a non-responsive computer at the moment. In the egoic lotus project, let's just see here. If I have... well, this is probably not worth your time. But if we have here the Egoic Lotus webinar book, yes, that's it. The Egoic Lotus table of references, and yeah, that'll be the one with marking which we've done so far, which are completed. Okay, which of those references are completed? So, although I don't really like to do it, I can say, okay, look, we can cross out these first two, because we have actually done that. Oh, and I see that I did make a mistake here. It's not until 207, not by any means. I was in the other book when I did that. So it's not 207, it's 326. 326, and that is the ending of EP1. Okay, that'll be enough, and we'll see you shortly. Bye-bye.